Welcome to The Learning Curve, a show about helping kids get good grades in school and succeed in life. The Learning Curve is for parents, teachers, and students, because all of life is a learning curve, and you'll succeed to the extent that you can learn easily. Now, here's your hosts, the authors of How to Learn, How to Teach, Overcoming the Seven Barriers to Comprehension, Roger and Virginia.
In today's show, we have Jennifer Turner, who's an honest-to-goodness, genuine homeschooling mom who believes in student-led learning. Jennifer and her husband own an auto body repair shop out in Lancaster County in Pennsylvania, and she's able to benefit from the local cyber charter school with its online curriculum along an online teacher backup and testing. But the key to Jennifer's success is she's able to indulge the particular learning styles of her kids and follow the student-led learning principles. So in today's show, you'll be able to hear how she manages all this to the benefit of the entire family. So welcome, Jennifer. It's good to have you here.
Thank you very much for having me.
Jennifer, I see that you homeschool two of your children, and you say you use a cyber charter school. What is that?
It is a public school online. So there's different schools in, I live in Pennsylvania, and there are different schools that offer this. They use a online curriculum, so we log into the computer every day, and there are lessons there are tests there, and we have a teacher who keeps us on track, communicates with us every week or so, and there's accountability. So we also, because it's a public school, we also have the standardized testing and all of that we have access to.
Boy, that's a sensible idea. And it lets the parents work with the kids and allows them to progress at their own pace, so to speak.
Now, sounds does sensible. This allow them to progress at their own pace? If they need to go back over a lesson, they're allowed to go back over it?
The curriculum that we use is K-12, and it does, the focus of that is mastery of the subject. At the end of the lesson, we teach the lesson, and then we have an assessment. It's not called a test, it's an assessment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right.
I ask my children questions, they have to answer it. If they don't answer it correctly, we go back and review the lesson. So it's an opportunity just to make sure that they understand. Mm-hmm. And then every lesson also reviews. So for history right now, I'm doing with my oldest a series on Vikings. There are 10 lessons, and each lesson will ask questions about what they learned the day before. Just are reviewing while you're learning new material to make sure that they really know what's being taught.
That is good, because one of the tragedies of the current in-school paradigm is that kids can get left behind, and they fleetingly touch on the subject somewhat superficially, but never get to mastering it.
Yes.
And how are your kids doing in history? That was my great boring failed subject.
They ask for it. They
do
love
they?
It.
So they actually see a reason for paying attention to history.
Yes,
I tell you a true little story here. In our research, we found that one of the great barriers to comprehension in youngsters, and the rot sets in, of course, in kindergarten, kids being forced to pay attention to things that didn't interest them, and they switch off.
Right.
And so they don't get it. And so that becomes the basis of later difficulties in not getting it. So I think it's wonderful the way that you've been able to work with the kids and excite them about learning. We often hear folk having reservations about homeschooling, you know, can they, as a parent, do it successfully and all that sort of stuff. Did you have any concerns when you began?
No, I have an education degree from my college, and I really enjoy teaching, really enjoy being with my children.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, homeschooling is a natural extension of who I am and the family goals that we have in our family. My husband has a business, so
yep.
Homeschooling allows us to be flexible in meeting his business needs. And it is challenging. There are many times that my youngest, will have a fit because he doesn't get the material. And I'll think, oh, it would be so much easier if I would send you to school and let the teacher deal with it. And then I think, you know, this is my privilege to be home and to be with my children and to
yeah.
say, to affirm them. You know, I love you. I know this is hard for you. We're going to work through this together. And the character traits of, yes, this is difficult, but you can get through this. And when you grow up and have a job, you're going to face challenges. You can get through it without screaming or quitting. That is really something that I would not trade for anything.
Before we started the show, you and I were talking, and I had said that I wished I had either been homeschooled or Montessori schooled, because I was convinced that if either one had happened, I would have blossomed, and you wanted to say something. So what was it you wanted to say?
Each child learns differently, has different personality, different thinking processes. And when you allow your child to lead the educational path, they are able to study things that interest them. They are able to explore topics that are meaningful. And you're, as a parent or an educator, you're able to guide them in really their natural giftings and talents. My oldest daughter loves crafts, and she just flourishes whenever she's being creative and artsy. I can incorporate that into our lessons to really help her be interested in things that she may not otherwise be interested in. She doesn't enjoy spelling tests at all, so I can have her play games with it. I can have her color the spelling list, all different colors, and that is one thing that I really appreciate about homeschooling, is that I can cater the curriculum to what my children are interested in, so that even the boring subjects or the challenging subjects are able to come alive to them.
Right, and they actually absorb them on the way following their interest, yeah. Mm-hmm. That is really good. How old is the young one?
He is almost six.
Oh, okay, so he's at the stage where he's putting letters together and making words out of them.
Yes.
So how did you find this online resource?
Well, I had been working at the time in an in-home daycare, and my boss was homeschooling her children, and she used this online source. And in order for me to stay working there, she said, I will homeschool your oldest child, who would be in kindergarten, with her son. So she taught them while I worked. And when I left that job, I decided to continue with it because, quite frankly, there are so many choices for curriculum. It is overwhelming when you're looking into homeschooling. It's almost, for me, it was difficult to even know where to begin. And this is, it's not a cop-out. It was just convenient. It gives me some accountability that I know what the goals are every week, because we have to enter attendance. There are, you know, we have to complete the curriculum. We can't just not, we can't avoid the curriculum. We have
right.
to do what's
you
there.
You got to meet the standard, yeah.
Yes, but we can go at our own pace. And for me, everything is written there, so I can just read what's written and I can adjust it however I want. But it saves time. I don't have to go out and find curriculum. I don't have to wonder, am I really teaching them everything they need to know? I appreciate the fact that there is a teacher there that's kind of helping us if we need help. Like my son needs speech therapy, so the school provides that for him, and that I really appreciate, those extra resources.
And the other side of the coin is, we had a statistic given to us by one of our guests some weeks ago, which mentioned that the actual FaceTime with teachers typically is down in the range of about 6 hours a week, whereas with a homeschooling situation, even though you have to meet the standards and stick to the curriculum, which is the state standard and all that sort of stuff, you would be getting in far more hours than that with the students on a weekly basis. So that's a real winner.
Yes, it is. And we, oftentimes, my children will sit down to eat lunch, and I will read them a story, or I will ask them questions about literature that we read that day. So we are interacting all during the day.
Yeah.
We can drive to go to the grocery store, and I can be talking about what we learned. So it is really a principle of that from the time they get up in the morning to then they go to sleep, we're learning. And it's not necessarily always the hard stuff, like the spelling words, just life principles and with curriculum mixed in.
Some of our guests here who tutor their own children talk in terms of even creating mathematical exercises as they drive around and go shopping, and the kids actually are learning mathematics.
Yes.
as a fun game.
I think games for children really open their eyes. And that is one of my goals of homeschooling, is to make it fun. So as much as possible, we will use hopscotch, we will use Play-Doh, we will use whatever play toys, magnets, all of those mm-hmm. things to help reinforce the lessons that they're learning in class.
That actually would very much facilitate the... Some students are very, what we call, holographic in their address to life and, of course, in their learning. Are any of your children, as far as you're aware, holographic?
I have not heard that term before. I have heard terms like kinetic, auditory, visual learning styles.
Right. There is a website that we like to refer people to. It's called 3D Learner. These folk actually have solved the problem of dyslexia. Dyslexics typically are holographic, and your great champion athletes are usually holographic. And it's a whole different perception than most usual folks have. And in fact, I am that way myself, as it happens. And I was walking along with Virginia last night going to a restaurant, and she was slightly behind me. And I said, whoops, you dropped something. And it's like I've got about 190 degree peripheral vision.
3D learners have a tendency to see the world as an entirety rather than seeing the individual little pieces of it. So they will take in an entire scene at once with all of its details rather than picking out the tree, the car, the whatever.
Mm.
And so they take it all in at once.
Yeah, they're typically action learners. They want to get involved
yes.
and do things to learn. If you paddle onto that website and then run a little test on your action learners.
Yeah, I will do that.
And you might make a little discovery.
Yes, I will do that, because I know one of the things, we had started my little guy in kindergarten last year just to start him, get him a head start so yeah. it wouldn't be so overwhelming this year. And one day I was reading to him his history lesson, and he's rolling on the floor, and I thought, you know what, at the end of the lesson, I asked the questions, he knows the answers, he was listening, he just... rolling on the floor while he was
yeah.
listening.
and often, as they get bigger, they'll still be active. They'll be fidgeting and doing something while they're absorbing. We actually had a medical doctor on a few months ago now who wrote the book, Have You Wrongly Been Diagnosed with ADHD? And what happens is sometimes these kids in the regular school, because they're fidgeters and they're active and all the rest of it, teachers get a little bit ticked off and send them along for discipline. So the nurse then says, well, you're hyperactive, and all the kid is active.
Yeah.
And eventually some of these children get referred to him, and he does his thorough rundown to find out what is really going on here, and all it is, the kid fidgets.
Yeah.
So let him fidget. It's easy. It makes it easier for him to learn.
Yes.
I mean, trying to make him sit still is a great punishment. Believe me, I lived through that one.
And that's one of the things that I really appreciate about this, being able to homeschool.
Yeah.
It is a stretch for me because I am a traditional student. So I sit still. I pay attention. Here it's with my son, and he is not that way at all. And
no.
It's a real challenge for me. But at the same time, it's one of the reasons why I don't want him to send him to school, because
yeah.
I know that he will be in the principal's office more than he is in the classroom.
That's right.
I know that some people who don't homeschool always have the question about socialization. How do you get your kids socialized when all they do is see each other at home? Do you have any answers that you would like to give people on that?
My first piece of advice is, if you cannot treat your family with kindness and respect, you're not going to treat strangers that way. So I always tell my kids, when we're here at home, we're going to treat each other with kindness, with respect. We're going to be polite. We're going to help each other. And we're going to learn how to be good citizens at home.
Yep.
And we do not exclude others at all. There are children that live here in my neighborhood. They come over and play every day with my children. I'm able to observe them and help the other children also learn how to be polite, how to share, how to take turns, how to deal with hurt feelings when there's a threesome and two want to play one thing and the other wants to go a different direction, how to compromise. These are lessons that we need in life. We actually do not neglect the socializing, and I'm not a parent that wants to keep my children away from any outside influences. We are in the community. We go to the park. We go to other socializing activities at the library with other families, other homeschooling students. This is not a choice for homeschooling that I made based on, you know, protecting my children. And I don't want to, I'm always a little skeptical of other parents that homeschool just to keep their children safe, because there's a big world out there and they need to know how to navigate. So we start at home, we include others in our home, in our activities, and I believe we get plenty of socializing.
That is good. And of course it's conducted in probably the most optimum manner, because you're able to set standards that the kids can then emulate and meet, whereas in the conventional schooling system, the socializing can be a little bit abusive and actually set the wrong standards. That's what I've observed, certainly in the modern situation.
So I'd like to ask a question. Well, going back to your curriculum in your cyber school, you were saying that your children need to take the regular standardized tests and meet the requirements of those standardized tests. Do you have to take them on a schedule along with everybody else who takes them, or can you take them when the children are ready for them?
That's a good question. I know for third graders and up, and where my oldest is in second grade, so already this year she has started some pre-testing to prepare for the PSSA test. Mm-hmm. And I believe then there are certain locations where the students, when they reach the grades that they need to take those testings, it's in the spring and they have to go to a location to take those tests. So it's not something that we can do online. We have to actually go to the testing location.
Okay, so you do have to, in a way, be ready to take that test at that time.
Yes.
If she doesn't do well at it, are you able to retake the test or what?
I don't think so. I think I'm hesitant to say because I'm not sure. I have not researched this. I'm not sure if the test results will determine funding for the school. I don't know about that. But I know most schools really place an emphasis on these standardized testings, that they want their students to score well. It reflects on the educational system, and it also shows that these children do know what they're supposed to know for their grade level.
Right. Yes, it's all part of the No Child Left Behind thing.
Yes.
And the schools have got to demonstrate that the kids are progressing and not being left behind. Otherwise, there's all sorts of government interference and aggravation, like you could get your dollars cut off and all that sort of stuff.
Right.
The tragedy is nowadays in the conventional schooling system, kids are actually really not being educated. What they're being done is effectively trained to meet a test. Some of the teachers we interview here call it teaching to the test. It's a high-stress, monstrous situation that kids now are being put through.
I'm seeing a bit of a possible challenge here in that you like to let your children, in a way, lead what will be taught. Well, maybe I'm saying this incorrectly, but you follow their interest line and help them to cover the subjects they need to learn according to their interest. But meanwhile, you need to make sure that you progress so that they are ready for these tests. Is there a bit of a difficulty or a conflict there?
There is a bit of a conflict, and it is one of the things that I am a list person. I like to make a list and check it off, and it is hard for me sometimes to see that I have to meet certain requirements and, okay, children, we have to rush to get this. And they're not always willing or able to rush through a concept.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a challenge for me as the teacher to say, okay, we're going to take more time on this particular topic until you really master it. And if it takes us a week, that's how long it takes. We'll just have to fall behind in the curriculum, or we'll have to work more at night to catch up. It also is challenging because I want my children to be interested in learning. I want to make it fun. But there are times that I have to say, I know you don't want to do all these math problems, but if you can do five of them and show me that you know it, then I can release you and you don't have to do the rest of them. So there are times that I make them do things that they don't really want to do, but I try to still cater to the things that they're interested in and really their capabilities, because school is work. It is hard work. It can be hard work. But while we're working, I want it to be enjoyable and fun, and I want them to flourish in their interests and things that they're able to do.
Well, I guess in a way you're also teaching them a life skill, in that there are things in life we really don't want to do, and sometimes we just have to do it.
Yes, I tell them that almost every day when there may be something that comes up that they don't want to do. I'll say, okay, we have to, again, back to my daughter with the spelling, we have to do spelling words today. And there are times that she'll say, oh, I don't want to. And I'll say, I don't really want to wash the dishes either, but I want us to have, you know, food. We need to be able to eat tonight for supper. So this is what I have to do, and I'm asking you to do these spelling words. And how can I make this fun for you? And I'll give her choices. Would you like to use the magnet tiles to spell out the words? Would you like to use the whiteboard and different markers? And I'll give her choices to make the task more enjoyable.
That's clever. And you're working with the kids in the areas when they don't get it. Have you observed any particular causes why they haven't comprehended the things that you've been trying to get across at all?
Sometimes it's simply because they just are not able to focus on that subject at the time. If there's a lot of extra stimulation going on, like where they know that we're going to do errands in the afternoon, sometimes it's harder to get them focused certain areas. And, you know, my son has a really difficult time with sounds and the reading, and so I noticed that he really struggles with that. And the one thing that I have noticed that really helps him is praise. When he gets a letter and he looks at it and he can tell me the sound and the name of it, I praise him and clap for him, and that makes him want to keep learning.
Yeah, it gives him a win that he wants to repeat.
Yes, so I try to reward them with things that are interesting to them and meet that need that they have for praise and for rewards. Because really in life we have to go to work, but the reward is that paycheck. So
well, yeah.
It does help. Rewards do help.
You've just articulated one of the barriers to comprehension that we've observed. It could be best expressed as a skipped step, or a could be called a bypassed gradient. There are certain sequences of things that one needs to accomplish so that one can then operate at a higher level. In the point you made about learning the sounds of the letters and the words, quite often that's missed in some educational systems. Kids are actually not taught the sounds of those funny little wiggly lines which we call the alphabet. And the end result of that is that when they try to use them to form words, they actually don't understand what the sounds are. So how did you go about handling the little fellow with his difficulty on sounds?
One of the things that we would do is there are some great books, alphabet books, and I have one right here, because he is still just this week struggling with the letter W. So yeah. This little book is called My W Book, and he can read through it. Well, I read it to him, and he points out all the W's, and by the end of the day, he was so excited to tell his daddy, I learned what W said today. So I use books from the library. I also will show him different words, and we have an alphabet that I have all the letters of the alphabet on cards that I have spread out here, and we sometimes will go through them and talk about what the sounds are. And he is really into cars, little model cars, matchbox cars.
Yeah.
So last year I took his matchbox cars and I formed them into the letters, the alphabet, and I took pictures of them, printed out the pictures, and then as we're going through, I will, during the day, pull them out and say, okay, here's this picture of the car. Do you remember the name of this letter? And he'll tell me, and I'll say, do you remember the sound? And sometimes he can tell me. We use that tool for him to learn the sounds, and I'm trying to think what else we did. I'm sure that it is very challenging for him.
Yeah.
This reading business, it is work, because he's just not quite ready. But we really, with the school, with doing the cyber school, that's one of the disadvantages is that really they are willing to work with us. So if he really needs to repeat this kindergarten phonics next year. He can move into first grade, and he'll just repeat the kindergarten phonics, or he'll do as much as he needs to catch up. So there is some measure of flexibility in there, but they really would like for him to
get it already.
Yeah.
Is he interested in having stories read to him, or is he interested in being able to, you know, read books himself yet?
He's so cute. In our shed outside, he loves bicycles. So he opened his own bicycle business, and he wants to repair bikes.
Oh, okay.
And I say to him to learn how to read and write invoices. And so he says, okay, I really want to learn how to get this so I can write invoices and get paid for my work. And
oh, smart kid.
Yes, and he does really enjoy having books read to him. And he says every once in a while that he wants to be able to read, but when it comes down to actually reading, it's such a challenge for him.
There's a big bypass gradient, actually, in the reading, learning to read process, because there's so many words there, which is often so complex. If the kids are exposed to words that they can't put together yet in the early days, they get losses. So it's very important that they only are exposed to the very simple words, so they can have big wins in getting it right, and then they can begin to put the more complex ones together.
Yes, I love that, because it is praising them when they're doing what they're able to do. That makes them want to learn more and progress.
And the other advantage you have is that you can continue, or I should say your children can continue to learn all during the summer. It's not like, oops, okay, it's the end of June, school and learning is over.
Yes.
You actually have 12 months of learning going on.
I talked to them about that just today, because my daughter said, we have 104 days of summer vacation. And I said, let me do the math. I don't think it's quite 104, but I said, we will get the calendars out on Monday, and we will take a look and see how many days of summer vacation we have, and we will plan something special for each day. We're also going to be continuing with our calendar work, and we're going to continue to read every day. And our library has a great resource where if the children read a certain amount, they can win prizes like ice cream cone from McDonald's. We have an amusement park. They can win a ticket to that. So that's a good incentive for our school-age children and even younger children to either read or have their parent read to them all during the summer.
Oh, that's great. That's wonderful.
Yes.
You've got a good system going down there.
Yeah.
Yes. Our people around here really care about education, and they care about our children, and really, the children are our future. So it's excellent to be able to invest in their education.
So do you think that there is some way that traditional or public schools would be, you are in a public school, so let's call it a traditional school, would be able to incorporate some of more of the student-led learning?
I do. I think that it takes some understanding on the teacher's part and some willingness for the teacher to be flexible in how the students learn. There is, in my opinion, nothing wrong with letting a child sit there and doodle on the paper with crayons or markers if they're older, or colored pencils while they're listening to the lecture, or to be able to stand up in the back of the room and do squats or jumping jacks or just
stand there.
As
long as they get the lesson.
Yes, as long as they're getting the lesson. And I understand that the teachers now in classrooms have a lot more students, and the pressure of the standardized testing that they need to prepare their students for. But it's more than just, I'm going to show up for work and I'm going to do what I can do with these kids. I'm going to, as a teacher, invest in their life. And I'm going to try to make it personalized as much as possible for each student. That may mean having a little thing of a little ball of clay that the child can squeeze or manipulate while they're listening. It may be giving verbal spelling tests instead of making them write. There are different methods that a traditional teacher can use for success for every student in the classroom.
Well, Jennifer, that's a good high note to end off our half an hour together today. That's really been a delight chatting with you and hearing the successes of essentially a self-taught home schooling mum. Now, have you got a blog address that you want to give us while we're on air, or you yet to create that?
I have yet to create that, and after our conversation today, I believe I'm going to jump into that as soon as possible.
Thanks for listening to The Learning Curve with Roger and Virginia. For more information on the subjects covered during the show, visit howtolearneasily.com or send an email to questions@howtolearneasily.com.